Good morning and welcome to the Morning Edge. I'm Floyd J. Winters and where's Augie? Well, today Augie is not with us. He's got a little personal issue he's taking care of and he will be back again with his normal eloquent self on Wednesday. And I'm here in the studio by myself. And today we're going to talk about a topic called regime change. That is, United States changing other governments. And if you would like to participate in today's discussion and weigh in on the idea, should we be allowed to change other governments? Is it beneficial to us? Is it really beneficial to the world that the United States changes other governments? You can call us at 941-745-1490. Now, I'm not here talking as a Democrat or a Republican. I'm talking here today as an American, someone who honestly loves his country, someone who wants the best for our great nation. But we can only move forward if we understand our past. And we have a problem with moving forward. Right now, we have the potential of entering World War III. ISIS is on the loose. ISIS is perhaps one of the most evil forces I've seen in my lifetime. The beheading of 21 Coptic Christians who were just looking for work. The burning of the Syrian pilot. The destruction of antiquities. The massacre of tens of thousands of people because they may be a different segment of the Nation of Islam, the massacre of Sunnis, the kidnapping of 200 schoolgirls in Africa, the beheadings, the atrocities that we haven't seen in our lifetime. As we engage in this war with this new enemy, we're going to need allies. We're going to need friends. And yet, for some reason, the world doesn't love the greatest nation on earth. The world isn't enthralled with the melting pot of nations, the beacon of tolerance, the one nation where anyone of any race can become a leader of a business, or even the leader of the free world. People are reluctant to join our bandwagon. They've looked at our history and they're wondering, can we trust America? And today, as we're preparing for our future battles with ISIS, I want to look at our past and let you know what the world sees. And unfortunately, it's not the best. I want you to judge. Now, the information I want to show you today is readily available. If you really want to understand America, the information you can look up in Wikipedia or any internet source or any encyclopedia. You can follow along. But I want you to weigh in and let me know if what happened was in the best interest of America. Or was it in the best interest of pineapple growers? The best interest of banana companies? The best interest of the oil industry? The best interest of military hardware sales? We're going to start going back in 1893 and work our way up to 2015. But just to take a look at one of our most beautiful states, Hawaii. Did you know why Hawaii is part of the United States? It used to be ruled by the Hawaiians. The last queen was beautiful, but kind of voluptuous and kind of heavy set. Queen Lililukilani. She was overthrown and replaced by a provisional government composed of the members of the Committee of Safety. Interesting name, the Committees of Safety. A group of mostly European and mainly American businessmen. And the most prominent one was a guy named Sanford Dole. They initially came to Hawaii as missionaries, because obviously they weren't Christian in Hawaii, and therefore they were kind of heathens, and we had to let them know the way they should live their lives. But they found something called pineapples. The Doles found pineapples, and they found they could make money off of pineapples, and they had pineapple plantations. And they found that Hawaii was a possibility of making great wealth off of farming and agriculture, tourism later on. And the Doles, initially as missionaries and later on as lawyers and businessmen, wanted to take Hawaii over and have more control and more profits. And eventually they did. In 1893 and 1894, they overthrew the Hawaiian government, the Committee of Safety, and the American lawyer and the son of the preacher, Sanford Dole, became President of the Republic. Hawaii, an American state. Why? Business. Pineapples. The Dole family. And then in 1950s became a state. I'm glad Hawaii is a state. It's a beautiful state. It extends our borders, but just to realize it's a state because of business, money, pineapples. Then we had the Spanish-American War. Moving on, interesting war. At one time, Cuba owned places like the Philippines and Spain owned places like Cuba, Puerto Rico, and the Philippines. And they weren't the greatest colonizer. Neither was England, neither was France, neither was Germany. Europe had conquered Latin America and Africa and Asia. And the Cubans weren't happy with the Spanish rule. And they were seeking independence from Spain. And the U.S. is kind of interesting because they're not very far away, just 90 miles away. And we had on the show last week Johann Warner. And it was his discussion last Friday, Johann Warner, the expert in Cuba, that led me to this particular show today on imperialism and regime change. Because what happened in Cuba is we were kind of interested in Cuban independence. We had become independent 100 years earlier, and we thought they also deserved the right of independence. And perhaps that was a legitimate feeling. But what was interesting is, again, money came into the picture. There were two individuals, one called Joseph Pulitzer. You remember the Pulitzer Prize? And a second guy called William Randolph Hertz. And they both owned competing newspapers. And we have a term called yellow journalism, to sensationalize the news for profit. People were looking at these headlines and saying, wow, I want to read this paper. This is before the internet, before the radio and the TV, and people would read the paper and they'd buy it, and they were following these adventures in Cuba. And Pulitzer and Hearst were competing with each other and exaggerating the news. And we had a U.S. Navy battleship called the Maine. It was in Havana Harbor, kind of looking after things. And there was an explosion and it sunk and there were American lives lost. And Pulitzer and Hertz were saying the Spanish sunk that ship and we should declare war on Spain. And we began making all kinds of threats against Spain. Now Spain was across the ocean, over 1,000 miles away. We're just 90 miles away. Spain is a lot smaller than we are at that time. They were still a great nation. They did not want a war with us. They would not have sunk the Maine. But it made no difference. We had these two guys, Pulis and Hertz, clamoring for war. And indeed, they got it. They got the war. It lasted a whole 10 weeks. And we defeated Spain. Not surprising. They couldn't compete with us 1,000 miles away when we were just 90 miles away. Theodore Roosevelt became very popular during that war and later on went on to become president. After the war is interesting. We won Cuba. We let them have their own independence, kind of. Kept Guantanamo Bay. We won the Philippines because Spain used to own them. Clear across the world in the Pacific Ocean. Interesting thought. I want you to think about this. The president in those days was William McKinley. We had just won the Philippines after this 10-week war. And McKinley is saying, what should we do with the Philippines? And he said this problem bothered him, so he paced the White House night after night, asking himself and praying to God. And God said, it is our duty to Christianize these savages. We must take them over and we must be good guardians of the Philippines. Unfortunately, God didn't know that in the 1500s, Ferdinand Magellan, in his voyage around the world, had discovered the Philippines and claimed the Philippines for Spain. And the 16th, the 17th, and 1800s saw the Filipinos become a predominantly Catholic nation. Devoutly Catholic. Somehow someone forgot to tell God that. We fought a very bloody, brutal war to Christianize a Catholic land. Very bloody, very brutal. What a shame that no one bothered to tell God that the Filipinos were already Christian. Eventually the Philippines became free after World War II. But it was a bloody war. Was it imperialism? You can decide for yourself. And then we took over Puerto Rico, which is still, and many people don't realize that, an American territory, and Puerto Ricans are citizens. They have American rights. Moving forward into the 1900s, there was a place called Guatemala. In the center of Central America, part of the great Mayan civilization, ruled by a series of dictators who had the support of a United Fruit Company. And guess who owned the United Fruit Company in Guatemala? Yeah, the Americans did. And there was a desire for this wealth, and again in fruit, in the bananas, and the export of this fruit, was the biggest crop, the biggest export Guatemala had. And some people in Guatemala thought, well, maybe the wealth of our country should belong to the people of our country. But the businessmen didn't like that. And as a consequence, there was a number of revolutions. And we led a coup in 1954. And after his bloody civil wars in the 60s, our backed authorities took over Guatemala, because how dare the Guatemalans profit from their main export? We took over the Guatemalan country. We led a coup. Again, on the line it says, the revolution was ended by U.S. engineered military coup in 1954. That's something I learned many, many years ago in college. It's something that's in the history books. It's something that's widely available on the internet. And I haven't heard Republicans or Democrats disagree with those facts, that we went to Guatemala for profit. And when that profit was threatened, we overthrew their government. It resulted in a very, very bloody war that we helped to pay for. They paid for in blood. But we became a more profitable government. So we looked at the Philippines, the bloody war there. We looked at Cuba. We looked at Hawaii, profit for pineapples. Guatemala, profit for bananas. And then we'll move on a little bit further, Nicaragua, also in Central America. Now these are our neighbors, Hawaii, Cuba, Puerto Rico, Guatemala, Nicaragua. That's the largest country in Central America. In 1909, the United States provided political support and U.S. warships to a conservative force that was rebelling against the president. The U.S. Marines occupied Nicaragua after they overthrew their president. We occupied it from 1912 to 1933 and installed the Somoza family that came to power as a part of the U.S. engineered revolution and pact. He wasn't a particularly popular leader. The family wasn't particularly popular. And they were deposed by the Sandinistas in 1979. And after that happened, they tried to keep tabs of how this family that had been put in power by the U.S. military, how they had done. They estimated their wealth to be close to $1.5 billion, their personal fortune. This country isn't that huge that one family should be worth over $1 billion in those days. The Sandinistas took power in July of 1979. Again, their thought was, why should one family own much of the wealth of our country? Shouldn't the people who live here and work here take part in some of the wealth? And we're not talking about communism or socialism as much as we're talking about, why should one family end up with a fortune of nearly $1 billion or a little bit over $1 billion when there's so much poverty here? We supported the conservative Somozas. Anyway, what happened that was interesting here was that we did not like this new government because they dared to believe that the common man should have as much rights as the upper class. And we aided a group of people called the Contras. The Contras, C-O-N-T-R-A-S. They were formed to oppose this new government. 1980, who was president? 1981, someone called Ronald Reagan, this grand master of the Republican Party, this god of the Republican Party. And he authorized the CIA to help the Contra rebels with funding and armaments and training. Congress wasn't real thrilled about that, and they prohibited the federal funding to the Contras. So what did Reagan do? What happened in 1980? Let's see. Somewhere around that time, just before Reagan took power, what occurred? Oh, yeah. The Iranians had seized the American embassy and had hostages there. The Iranians were our declared enemy, and Reagan took power saying that he would resolve this issue with the Iranians, and he threatened all kinds of things. But yet, he did not like in a neighboring state, Nicaragua, which wasn't that far away, neighboring country, that there were the people who were interested in representing the average man, the Sandinistas. So he supported the Contras to overthrow the Sandinistas and get back into a more dictatorship, to get back to someone who'd be more business-friendly. So under the Reagan administration, they needed to supply arms to the Contras, and the Congress prohibited federally funding the Contras. So with a guy named Oliver North, Colonel Oliver North, they worked to covertly sell arms to a country called Iran. Reagan, under his administration, and Oliver North, who's a featured speaker on Fox Network and has been a featured speaker here in Manatee County, because again, he was a Republican and he was a hero for selling aid to the Contras and arms to Iran. Iran, who people still regard as their enemy. The Republicans want to go to war with Iran. Netanyahu wants to go to war with Iran. Huge country. We want to go to war with Iran. And here is Reagan, the god of the Republicans, willing to sell arms to Iran so he can take the money and funnel the proceeds to the Contras, the Iran-Contra affair. As a consequence, we were responsible for tens of thousands of people who died in Nicaragua. So we have Nicaragua, we have Hawaii, we have Cuba, we have Guatemala. United States overthrowing governments for various reasons, often for profits. Pineapples, bananas, newspaper proceeds for yellow journalism. In Panama, in 1989, there was an invasion of Panama by the United States. And we overthrew their president and captured him, detained him as a prisoner of war in Noriega. And he was flown to the United States. I'm not sure if he's still in jail here or not, but we overthrew the leader of Panama. In Chile, in 1973, there was a coup, an overthrow of the government, of an elected president, Salvador Allende. And he wasn't right-wing, he was left-wing. He was somewhat socialist, that is, he wasn't communist, but the philosophy was that he wanted the wealth to go more to the people as opposed to being in the hands of the few. We didn't like that idea. So as a consequence, there was a coup. Their elected president was overthrown. It's widely known that the CIA was involved with it. There was a 16-year-long military dictatorship that lasted afterwards. Thousands of people dead and missing. Well known throughout South America that we overthrew the government of Chile, that we overthrew the government of Panama, that we overthrew the government of Nicaragua, that we overthrew the government of Guatemala, that we started a war in Cuba. Well, it's well known by some people, the people who look at history, the people who want to learn from history, the people who are wary and scared of this wonderful, great, moral nation called the United States. That's in our own hemisphere. I'd like you to think about that. We're going to take a little break, and we will be back. But we're going to just listen to one of our advertisers for a moment, and we'll come right back.
Sarasota is home to a true gift, the Posture Clinic of Sarasota, with Dr. Mark D'Amato. 4450 South Tamiami Trail, Dr. D'Amato is a veterinary chiropractor treating horses, dogs, or your favorite four-legged friend. First and foremost, animal chiropractic care is not intended to replace traditional veterinary medicine. Complementary care is a type of care that works with your vet and certainly not instead of them. To find out more information, call Dr. Mark D'Amato at 941-927-7009. That's 941-927-7009. Oh, and by the way, Dr. Mark treats two-legged patients too. With the
animals. Please support the Morning Edge on WWPR 1490 AM. I'm co-host Floyd J. Winters, and I can build you a personalized and customized website at an affordable price. Advertise a small business, chronicle a wedding or share a collection of photos, post your own resume or the resume of your out-of-work brother-in-law. For details, visit BradentonWebsiteDesign.com. Oh, do a Google search on the keywords Bradenton Website Design and see which non-pay-for-click site comes up at the top of the page. Visit BradentonWebsiteDesign.com.
And we are back,
and I am Floyd J. Winters, and we're talking about history, we're talking about regime change, we're talking about what's in the best interest of people, the people of a nation, the people of America, the people of other nations. Have we been acting in the best interest of the world or the best interest of Americans? We looked at, in the first part of our show, we looked at how we ended up with Hawaii, largely because of the initial religious leaders and then the businessmen who saw the profits in crops such as pineapples that overthrew the government of Hawaii, the Committee for Safety, and the Dole family. The Spanish-American War was fought on the idea of making money for Pulitzer and William Randolph Hearst and yellow journalism. And what happened, they claimed that the Spanish sunk the battleship Maine. 100 years after the war, when they went down with scuba gear and examined the USS Maine, they found that the ship had not had an explosion from the outside in, but from the inside out. It was not due to the Spanish authorities. It was indeed an accident that led to a war. Guatemala, because of our profits in the banana industry, we overthrew a government and we put our own leaders in power. Very bloody. But again, it made businesses more money in the United States. The United Fruit Company, Guatemala, Nicaragua, did not like the government there because it wasn't as friendly to U.S. businesses. The Somoza family was installed when they were deposed by the Sandinistas. We didn't like that idea. Ronald Reagan, against the wishes of Congress, sent arms to our enemy in Iran. The Republican President Ronald Reagan, against the wishes of Congress, sent arms to our enemy in Iran so they could aid the Contras in Nicaragua. Here the Republicans want to go to war. Not all Republicans, but some Republicans want to go to war with Iran. And yet, their god, their hero, Ronald Reagan, was sending arms to Iran, who had just recently released hostages that they took over in the U.S. Embassy. But there was profits to be made by shipping arms to Iran, and then we could aid the Contras. Panama overthrew Noriega, overthrew the government. Chile led to the assassination of Salvador Allende. Let's move across the seas in the second half of the show and take a look at the things that have happened. And if you have an interest in this, you can give us a call at 941-745-1490. In Vietnam, we were worried about the effects of the Cold War that we were fighting with Russia. And in Vietnam, we were afraid if they became communist, that the domino theory would take effect in Vietnam and Cambodia and Thailand would fall like dominoes. And pretty soon, we'd be surrounded by communist nations. Vietnam was halfway around the world, literally. They had just fought the French to gain independence. And in 1954, they overthrew the French after the Battle of Dien Bien Phu, and the French lost, and they simply realized that they could not win this war thousands of miles away. They realized it was too expensive, too costly, and it wouldn't work. So what happened? The United States decided maybe we could, being even another 1,000 miles away, perhaps we could win this war, traveling even a greater distance. And we weren't real thrilled what was happening in Vietnam because people weren't particularly happy with the government that was there. And so as a consequence, the United States is widely held responsible for the assassination of Diem and Lu, who were the leaders of Vietnam, and they were assassinated in 1963, about the time we were starting to send troops, not troops, but advisors under Kennedy into Vietnam. Yes, John F. Kennedy sent advisors into Vietnam. He was worried about the spread of communism from the north. Ho Chi Minh was fermenting in the north and interested in making all of Vietnam communist. And there was a dictatorship in South Vietnam. We weren't happy with it, so we basically installed our own leaders. Now, Kennedy was pretty much opposed to Vietnam as far as sending boots to the ground. And this is important, boots on the ground. Kennedy didn't mind advisors. Boots on the ground. President Obama has a similar idea, similar dilemma right now. Does he put boots on the ground in Europe? Does he put boots on the ground in Syria, in Iraq, to fight ISIS? It's a hard question. Kennedy wasn't very happy with the idea, the prospect. Wasn't enthusiastic going in. Obama's been reluctant, looking at what's happened in Vietnam, looking at what's happened in Afghanistan, looking at what's happened in Iraq. Does he want to put boots on the ground? Well, there was a group of Americans, and they were largely Republicans, but also some Democrats under Lyndon B. Johnson. They were interested in putting boots on the ground, but they didn't really have the rationale. And they needed to have some reason. Why should we go to war with this country halfway around the world? Well, they were preaching the domino theory, the domino theory. If Vietnam falls, Cambodia will fall, Thailand will fall, Europe will fall, America will fall to this scourge of communism. But they still needed some kind of authorization. And that came in the Gulf of Tonkin resolution in 1964, where there was a battleship, well, it was a U.S. destroyer, Maddox, that was conducting a patrol in the waters of Vietnam, off the coast of Vietnam, and they were attacked, this is kind of in quotes, they were attacked by three North Vietnamese Navy torpedo ships. There was no harm really done to the Maddox. And there are a lot of questions about, really, did this attack really happen? And recently, just recently in 2005, the NSA, in a historical release of declassified information, concluded that the Maddox had engaged the North Vietnamese Navy, but there may not have been any North Vietnamese Navy vessels present during this engagement on August 4th, which preceded the Gulf of Tonkin resolution. The NSA's own classified document said, basically, this attack on the USS Maddox was fabricated. The vessels that attacked it were not really close enough to have really been a threat to the USS Maddox. President Johnson, even in his private comments, says, for all I know, our Navy was shooting at whales out there. Johnson realized that this Gulf of Tonkin resolution was pretty much fabricated, but he needed some kind of justification to sell the Americans on this war. And as a consequence, we went into a long and bloody war that cost 50,000 American lives in Vietnam. Now, I bring this up because what did it accomplish? Did we really stop communism? Did we make America safer? Did we win this war? Or did we spend America's blood and treasure in Vietnam? 50,000 Americans dead. Some of them my friends. People I went to high school with. People that I cared very much about. 50,000 American dead. And I was indeed planning on going to Vietnam. I was in ROTC, planning on being in the Air Force. And I looked at the history of the region. I looked at what we were accomplishing. I looked at the deaths. And to me, it didn't make sense. The French couldn't do it. Why could we do this? This is not our war, but the atrocities of napalm, the atrocities of unconstrained barbarity that happened to both sides. What was it accomplishing? It was scary. And I wish that we accomplished some good. Vietnam is a big nation. 91 million people. It's a big nation. And oddly enough, they're our friends today. Why? Because they don't want China to take them over. And they see America as a possible ally. Oddly enough, they are our friends today because the Chinese and Vietnamese did not get along very well together. And we have a caller. Caller, I'm going to put you right on the air. Right on the air. Caller, welcome to the Morning Edge.
Floyd, this is John down in Sarasota. What an eloquent review of history. You've just given in the last 30, very measured, very reasoned, very accurate, needed perspective. I'd like to add another perspective, which a lot of people who now live in Florida have forgotten or maybe take for granted.
Go.
Is that okay?
Absolutely, John. This is our conversation.
One of the terrifying for me, one of the, and I'm about your age, I'm a boomer, I'm a 60, 61. One of the terrifying things about Netanyahu's, which I thought very damaging, very dangerous visit to Capitol Hill last week, was a further culmination in what I consider to be irrational war fever. And to add my little reminder to your show, and this was really, really, really incredibly articulated and outlined in one of my favorite documentaries called The Fog of War about Robert McNamara. And in that, he had done it previously, but it's extremely poignant and extremely profound in this documentary, The Fog of War. Robert McNamara says, President Kennedy at the time of the Cuban Missile Crisis was under extraordinary pressure from his chief of staff and his military advisors, especially Curtis LeMay, to invade Cuba. And now this is Robert McNamara, who was the defense secretary during the Cuban Missile Crisis. And Kennedy resisted immense pressure. He was collected, he was thoughtful, he knew history, he'd read Barbara Tuchman about how the world had been plunged into World War One, and he was very restrained and collected. Robert McNamara, in this documentary, Floyd, says that if we would have bombed or invaded Cuba, which all of the military joint chiefs were strongly advising against, I mean, almost calling Kennedy a coward, that the nuclear warheads had been put in place unbeknownst to our intelligence community, and they would have launched, and it would have begun World War III. It certainly would have taken out much of Florida. There would have been a nuclear holocaust here in Florida because a lot of the invasion would have been launched here from Tampa, et cetera.
What was interesting, John, when I was a kid, we actually had nuclear drills where we were taught we were taught to get under our desk and put our hands over our heads to protect ourselves from the potential of these bombs. There was this big war fever to go to war with Cuba and to go to war with Russia, and it was just, we were so lucky.
Water. I can remember as an 8, 9, 10-year-old, whatever I was, I can remember bottling water during that October. It was so petrifying, and 2 or 3, for years in elementary school, we drilled with air raid sirens and all that. But this talk show would not be here. I would not be here. You would not be here. The state of Florida would not be here if Kennedy had acceded to pressure. And that's one of the things that we can contrast the former president, Bush, who did accede to a lot of pressure, and this president. The one thing I like about this president that he's been getting immense pressure to do potentially rash and incalculable, you know, knowing what the 4th, 10th, 20th consequences down the road. So one of the things I really like about this president is that he is restrained. Because if we don't reach some kind of verifiable negotiated treaty with Iran, there's only one other option, and that's war. And the size of Iran and the power of Iran makes the Iraq thing, you know, look like a Saturday night brawl. And it would really be World War III. And then you talk, then you look at what's going on in Ukraine and all the pressure to, you know, show how tough we are with Russia. So I'm glad that President Obama is showing restraint like Kennedy did, because the consequences can be just incalculable. Just like, remember, we were told the Iraq war would take months, that their oil would pay for it. You know, we'd be greeted as liberators. You know, and look at the mess. We were there for a dozen years, not months. Oil didn't pay for it. Cost us $1 trillion, thousands of American lives, hundreds of thousands of Iraqi lives. You know, and that is just a mess now. So I'm glad. So it's really important in the commander in chief that he shows some restraint.
Those are wonderful comments. And Iran, 79 million people in Iran. It's not a small country. It's a strong country. The women have more rights there than they have in other Arab nations. Our friends in Saudi Arabia, the women have far less rights.
And yet, before we invaded Iraq, Floyd, Sunni and Shia lived in neighborhoods together. You know, yes, it was a brutal, oppressive dictatorship. You know, and there was all this hysteria that was, you know, wrenched up, you know, about the invasion, you know, that a lot of people fell for, you know, because it was right after 9/11. But Sunni and Shia lived in neighborhoods.
Christians lived in Iraq. Today there were very few. They were forced out. Women had rights. They didn't have to wear veils. They were a secular government. Yes, he was a dictator, but for a while he was our dictator. We gave him his power, just like we built up Osama bin Laden and gave him the Stinger missiles to fight the Russians.
Right. That might have been a good thing, you know. But we, you know, to get the Russians out of Afghanistan, you know. But right now, you know, there's such a potential. The Republicans really don't have a domestic agenda that appeals to people in this country, so I believe they purposely trump up, you know, fears of the foreign invader, you know, as a political tactic to get votes. And I believe that was in part what the Bush administration did, because the Republicans' economic agenda does not appeal to people. Tax cuts and cutting government services, cutting education, busting labor unions, shipping jobs overseas is not an appealing agenda, no matter how they try to cloak it.
Well, I wish that was true, John, because there were some elections this past midterm elections where a lot of Republicans were elected, unions were busted, governors were put into office who fought, it seemed, against the wishes.
And people didn't get off their asses.
I know, what a shame.
It was extraordinarily depressing, outrageous. One-third of the people voted. You know, it's just, it's outrageous. It's outrageous that people stayed home and put Scott back in down here. Mm-hmm. It's just outrageous.
And I don't want to attack Republicans. There are some wonderful, noble, intelligent Republicans out there.
I agree.
But our political system is electing the people on the fringes. And whenever one takes the power, whether it's Democrats, Republicans, we're putting into office fringe Democrats, fringe Republicans, and they don't work with each other. Our closed primary system just elects radicals, and their purpose is to not compromise, not to work with each other. Moderates don't have a chance anymore in our political system. And it's a shame because there are good Republicans out there. I've met so many of them. And I hate to paint them with the same brush. I like to think that I'm an American. I'm a Democrat, yes, but I'm an American first.
Sure.
I wish more people could feel that way. An American first, and then a Democrat, then a Republican. We have to work together. And I kind of resist this painting and tarring of Republicans. But unfortunately, there is a difference. Republicans tend to stand up for the wealthy, at least those in Congress.
Well, yep. Let me ask you this, Floyd. As an American, I'm going to just shift really quickly because the show's getting ready to stop, but this is another really something that makes me really angry. As an American, how as an American, and maybe as a person of faith, how do the Republicans in the state of Florida legislature rationalize in their churches on Sunday and rationalize as they sleep at night, denying almost a million people Medicaid when the money is there? How forget about being Republicans, but how, as an American, how can you sleep at night knowing that your fellow citizens may be suffering, may die prematurely, because you won't accept Medicaid money? I just don't get that either.
It's interesting when you add these religious leaders, the Republicans, and the moral majority. It was religious leaders who helped to overthrow Hawaii. It was religion that led President McKinley to go into the Philippines to Christianize a Catholic nation. He
right.
said he spoke to God, and God told him that we should Christianize this thing. It's
right.
under the realm of religion that we're doing these things. The religion
right.
between the Sunnis and
like
the Shiites.
Right. To be fair, just like your comments with Republicans, it was also religious fervor that was motivating a lot of the civil rights movement.
Absolutely, on both
and so,
ends.
Just to be fair, I mean, and yes, it was from the pulpits for maybe 150 years, where slavery was endorsed by much of the Protestant and Catholic denominations in this country. But to be fair, there's also been very extraordinarily important positive contributions through religion, and I wish. I wish that would be felt in our state capital about our fellow American citizens who don't have the money to even see a doctor and that could if they had Medicaid.
Yeah, those are excellent points. And we're not...
You're a great host, Floyd. I don't want this to be a mutual admiration society, but you're a great host and your voice was really in good to hear from this morning. And I look forward to further shows.
Well, thank you very much, John. I appreciate your call, and hopefully I'll hear from you again. Well, we're going to kind of start to wrap this up. I wanted to get a little bit into Iran. We eventually go on and we overthrow the government of Iran, and we overthrow the government of Iraq. We overthrow the government of Libya. And with Iraq and Libya overthrown, these bad guys, Gaddafi, Hussein, they were not good guys at all. But they stabilized their countries. And there were not Al-Qaeda. And Gaddafi, again, he was not known to be a good guy. And he probably was, not he personally, but his country was possibly responsible for the downing of the jetliner over Lockerbie, Ireland. But what was happening with him in power was far better than with him not in power. The same thing with Hussein. Christians had rights in Iraq. Women had rights in Iraq. You didn't have the killings of tens of thousands of people every year, brutal killings. And the prospect of a caliphate in Iraq. Got to ask ourselves this question. Has our involvement in all these countries made the world a better place? The involvement in the Philippines, in Guatemala, in Nicaragua, in Panama, in Chile, in Vietnam, in Iraq, in Iran. Have we made the world a better place by putting in the Shah of Iran? Has it been for the best for those countries? Has it really been the best for the United States? Those are important questions to ask, because we need to now exercise moral leadership, because we're now facing a terrible enemy. The Muslims in the world number something like 1.3 billion people. Most of them, I'm hoping, are good, wonderful people. I've got some close Muslim friends who are just beautiful, humorous, educated. They care about their children or families. But like any party, Democrat or Republican, there are the fringe elements that are just, you can't deal with them. Like any nation, there are the elements that have their criminals and their insane people. Like any school system, I've taught for most of my career. And if I have 100 students, I'm guaranteed to have one or two certifiably crazy people in my class. And we have a lot of crazies now that are now representing Islam, these terrorists. Beheadings, burnings, torture, barbarity, destruction. And we have to deal with this. Obama needs our support. We have to come together as a nation and face this enemy. It's going to be hard to garner this world support now because of what we've talked about during this program. I'm hoping in the later shows we can look at ISIS. Time magazine this week talked about the trap of ISIS. Osama bin Laden, his goal was to bring Americans to his territory so we could fight them on their terrain where they had the advantage, and Osama bin Laden has accomplished his goals. We are now looking to go and fight ISIS on their territory, on their terms. It's frightening. We need to exhibit the moral leadership in the reservation that we haven't done in the past.
You're listening to 1490 AM. WWPR, Bradenton, Sarasota, Tampa Bay.
And we will be back next week. We will be back on Wednesday with the one and only Augie. Thank you very much for listening to this show.
With SRN News, I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. The battle continues against ISIS in Iraq. Iraqi troops beginning to...